Hello, everyone. My name is Elijah Davis, minister of the 12th Apostolic Sabbatarian Congregation outside the 12th on the Elvin, Texas. Today is February 17, 2024. It is 8-8-2027. We're going to start our first service on this Sabbath day with a song, and then we'll go into our sermon taken from Living Symbolic Code number 12 by Richie Holler, entitled The Kingdom of Heaven Locking Unto 10 Virgins. This is always present truth, and we need to understand these parables of what the kingdom of heaven is locking unto. It is the law of the mind. We'll start our sermon June 8, 1946, entitled The Kingdom of Heaven Likened Unto 10 Virgins, Matthew 25. And the prayer thought says it is a law of the mind that it gradually adapts itself unto the subjects on which it is trained to dwell. For if occupied with the commonplace matters only, it will become dwarfed and enfeebled. If never required to grapple with the difficult problems, it will, after a time, almost lose the power of the growth. As an educating power, the Bible is, without a rival, in the Word of Yahweh, the mind finds subject for the deepest thought, the loftiest aspiration. The Bible is the most instructive history that men possess. It came fresh from the fountain of the eternal truth, and the divine hand has preserved its purity through all the ages, for it lights up the far distant past where the human research seeks vainly for the penetrating. And the Yahweh's word, we behold the power that laid the foundation of the earth and that stretched out the heavens. Here only can we find a history of our race unsullied by the human prejudice or the human pride. Here are recorded the struggles, the defeats, and the victories of the greatest men this world has ever known. Here the great problems of duty and destiny are unfolded. The curtain that separates the visible from the invisible world is lifted, and we behold the conflict of the opposing forces of the good and evil, from the first entrance of sin unto the final triumph of the righteousness and truth. And all is but a revelation of the character of the other. In the reverent contemplation of the truths presented in his word, the mind of the student is brought into the communion with the infinite mind. Such a study will not only refine and ennoble the character, but it will expand and invigorate the mental powers. Okay, it says, for the teaching of the Holy Scriptures has a vital bearing upon the man's prosperity in all the relations of this life, for it unfolds the principles that are the cornerstone of a nation's prosperity, principles with which is bound up the well-being of the society, and which are the safeguard of the family, principles without which no man can attain usefulness, happiness, and honor in this life, or can hope for the securing of the of the man's experience of which the teaching of the Holy Scriptures is not an essential preparation. Studied and obeyed the word of Yahweh would give unto the world men of a stronger and more active intellect than will the closest application for all of the subjects that the human philosophy embraces, for it would give men of the strength and solidity of the character, of the keen perception and sound judgment, men who would be an honor for the Yahweh and a blessing for the world. Patriarchs and Prophets, Ellen G. White, page 596. That ends our prayer thought, no doubt, and now we'll go into our regular topic, the Kingdom of Heaven. It says, for the brother so-and-so, who is visiting us, has asked me to give a study on the kingdom, and with the Yahweh's help, I shall endeavor to do my best for the bringing out of the certain facts on this subject of the kingdom of Daniel 2:44-45. Let us turn now unto Matthew 24:42-43. It says, watch therefore. It says, watch therefore, for you know not what hour your Yahshua, the Son of Yahweh, doth come. He says, you're to watch. Well, the thing is, those that don't understand the parabolic time clock of the 12 hours a day, what Yahshua told the disciples, are there not 12 hours a day? Work while you have the light. The disciples, they never heard of such a thing. They was wanting to go home while there was still daylight. They were in the 12th hour. They didn't know what time. They just knew they was in the last hour of the day. They wanted to go home. They were tired. They'd been out all day long. They just wanted to go home. Now, sister, now we got work to do. It's still daylight. So watch you therefore, for you know not what hour your master doth come. But know this, that if the good man of the house had known and what watch the thief would come, he would have watched and would not have suffered his house to be broken up. Well, the first place, if the good man of the house hadn't befriended that thief to begin with, he wouldn't have had to worry about that thief washing his house and breaking into it. He'd have run that thief off and got rid of him and got him off his property a long time ago. That's why the good man was admonished to watch, because he didn't know when a thief would come, because he allowed that thief to live on his property, lurking and watching for the good man of the house to leave the house just so the thief could go in and steal his goods. That's all a thief is good for. These verses convey the idea that no one knows the day and the hour of the Yahshua's coming. And therefore the Yahshua admonishes his people to be ready all the time. Well, that's just true. If you're ready all the time, you don't have to worry about what happens when he finally shows up. Then he draws the illustration that if a certain one knew that a thief would attempt to break into his house at a certain time, he would certainly watch for him. But the fact is that no one knows exactly when a thief will enter. Well, you can't stay home all the time. funny. You can't stay home and worry about a thief breaking into your house. You got to leave your house sometime. The thing is, you lock it up. Brother Johnson, he didn't lock his house up when he went to church at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. His church is just 8/10 of a mile from his house, but on the Sabbath day, he trusted it and left it open. Well, the thief watched him one day, and he saw Brother Johnson leave his house. And as soon as Brother Johnson got off his property out of sight, that thief went into his house and stole about $5,000 or $6,000. All Brother Johnson had to do was lock his house, and he wouldn't have to worry about that. But he quit locking his house. That's what was wrong. This implies that there are certain conditions which must be met by those who would be called faithful and wise servants. They must be giving meat in due season. Matthew 24:40 says, "Blessed is that servant whom his master, when he cometh, shall find so doing." We, as a denomination, as a Seventh-day Adventist, should be able to reason out of the lesson that is in these verses, according unto the verses 45, Yahshua has made someone ruler over his household, who would that be in the Yahweh's church and the denomination, if we are to attach this to someone? It would necessarily be attached unto the president of the General Conference, who heads all the work. And since his responsibility is spread throughout the churches and shared by the ministry whom he directs, it follows that they all are included in what Yahshua is saying here. That is the only thing that it should mean. Matthew 24:45. Who then is a faithful and wise servant whom his master hath made ruler over his household to give them meat in due season? Now, then, in 1970, when I joined Gilead Center, third branch of the Seventh-day Adventist Church, Brother Johnson, the prophet, the head of the candlestick, he was the servant that Yahweh had chosen to be ruler over his household in 1970. The General Conference of the Seventh-day Adventist, the president of the General Conference of the Seventh-day Adventist, was not the ruler over Gilead Center. The third feeding parish, Brother Stephen Johnson, was the ruler. So when it's asking the question, who then is a faithful and wise servant, you say, well, whoever is in charge of the candlestick of Laodicea, that's a faithful and wise servant. And in 1970, that was Brother Stephen Johnson, the man I joined in 1970. Okay, let's read this again. We, as a Seventh-day Adventist denomination, should be able, for the reasoning out of the lesson that is in these verses, for according unto the verse 45 of Matthew 24, the Yahshua, the Son, has made someone ruler over his household. And again, as I want to say, and that is not the General Conference of the Seventh-day Adventist Church. That's not the president of the General Conference today, but be Ted Wilson. Because Ted Wilson, first place, is an invader. He's an intruder. He's not even an Adventist, never was an Adventist. And he is nothing but an invader that has taken over the leadership of the Adventist Church. Like a military man. That's all he is. Who would that be in the Yahweh Church and the denomination of the Seventh-day Adventist Church? If we are for the attaching of this unto someone, it would necessarily be attached unto the president of the General Conference, who heads all of the work. And, of course, since his responsibility is spread throughout the churches and shared by the ministry whom he directs, it follows that they all are included in what the Yahshua is saying here. That is, as the only thing that it could mean. Matthew 24:45. Who then is a faithful and wise servant whom his master hath made ruler over his household for the giving them meat in the due season? That means present truth on a daily basis. Should not meet in the due season be a message for the, let's do this in the positive, for the meet in the due season is a message that comes from the Yahweh on a daily basis, especially addressed unto his people, and with the application at that time. Another name for the meat in the due season is with the present truth. So then, with the sermon, with this present truth, is to give his household this present truth. Matthew 24:46. But I'll say one thing, Brother Johnson, Vicki Hollis wrote this, but he didn't give present truth every day, because he didn't know, he was limited. He only had present truth for a topic, to write thereabouts, but not to be precise. Or what it really precisely meant on a daily basis. Matthew 24:46. Blessed is that servant whom his master, when he cometh, shall find so doing. Now, sure, he came in 1955. Vicki Hollis died in 1955. But Yahshua had to be there directing the kingdom when the leader died. So he directed Florence Hollis, the wife of Vicki Hollis, to take charge of the kingdom that Vicki Hollis was in charge of. And she tried to organize it for 5 years. She did all kinds of stuff. Finally ended up selling the old Mount Carmel off and dividing up the money and going buying new property and setting up a new Mount Carmel. It didn't work out, so she ended up taking what she had left, married a man named Aiken, and took off for the to the West Coast, Oregon area. That's where she lived until she died. So Vicki Hollis, Ben Roden, took over from Vicki Hollis after Florence Hollis gave up. And Ben Roden was next in line, and he took over until 1970. And Brother Johnson was next in line, and he took over in 1970. And then in 2002, 2003, Otis Johnson's time was up, and I succeeded him, and I took over then in 2003, of Otis Johnson. So this is how Yahshua come and reckoned with his servants. Those that were qualified, he appointed to be the head of the candlestick of leadership. And then as soon as their time was up, he appointed their successor. That's just that pure and simple. And that's where we're at today. It says that, it says Matthew 24:46. Blessed is that servant whom his master, when he cometh, shall find so doing. Well, Yahshua came at the Passover 2002, and he made the application. I came to my own, and they received me not. I came and I found no man. So he says, my right arm brought me salvation. He said, I had to have my own right arm I brought with me. But that right arm was the kingdom of David, Massachusetts. 44 and 45. He said, I brought my own arm with me that brought me salvation. So I came to my own and said, they didn't recognize me. I found no man that I could entrust with the kingdom. So I brought my own with me. That was the house of David, 2002. It says, if our application is now right, that this is speaking unto the Seventh-day Adventist denomination, just prior unto the Yahshua's coming, and Brother Johnson was the last angel of the candlestick of Laodicea, the third feeding pastor of the Seventh-day Adventist Gilead Center from 1970 to 2003, he was this last one in charge of that candlestick. Then we must understand that Yahshua, the Son, wants his servants to give unto his household meat in the due season until he come. Matthew 24:47. Verily I say unto you that he shall make him ruler over all his good. Okay, this verse implies that Yahweh has not as yet made his servant ruler over all his good. But when he proves true by attending unto his business of the faithfully giving unto his household meat in the due season until Yahshua comes, then the Yahshua is going to make him ruler over all of his good. That is the promise. Now, in Revelation 2:26, it said, he that overcometh will I give to rule over the nations. Okay. Now, he's talking about one of those angels of those seven churches of Laodicea. He said, whichever one of these seven churches that has a leader that overcometh, I'm going to give him to rule over the nations. But did you know there's seven angels of those seven candlesticks that those have led us here? I mean, they're in Revelation 2:3 of those seven churches. That there were seven candlesticks, seven angels put in charge of those seven candlesticks, and the last one was led us here. And as you know, Yahshua never found one servant that he had made ruler over those seven candlesticks all through the years. He never found a one that he could depend on to bring forth the purified kingdom. Yeah. If no one is to know the day and hour, okay. So Matthew 24:48-50. But us, and if that evil servant shall say in his heart, my master delayeth his coming, and shall begin to smite his fellow servant, and to eat and drink with the drunken, Yahshua of that servant shall come in a day when he looketh not for him, and in an hour that he's not aware of. If no one is to know the day and the hour until Yahshua comes, then how could this servant be aware of the day and the hour? Do you see that one statement seems to contradict the other? No one knows the hour of the day. Therefore, Yahweh's people must be ready for the event to occur at almost any time. And if this servant does not faithfully perform his duties, then when Yahshua is about to come, that servant will not be aware of it. Is that not how you understand these two statements? Up until a certain time, Yahweh's people do not know the day and the hour. But if they continue to receive meat in the due season, on a day will come when this servant is going to be made aware of that hour and of that day. For this illustration was not given unto us alone, but unto all of Yahweh's people, ever since it was written, and they were warned to be ready all the time, because no one knew the day and the hour of his coming. Well, they certainly didn't know that down at Kermit, Texas, because since Willis Johnson was dismissed from his duties at Kermit in 2002-2003, I succeeded him. His son was anointed and ordained to carry on from Willis, but his son didn't carry it on. And his son lived 20 years until 2023, and his son just died last December of 2023. So, Willis Johnson died in 2012, and his wife died in 2016, and now his anointed son died in 2023, and his anointed son's wife died in 2023. So there is nobody to succeed Willis Johnson in Gilead Center except Elijah Davis, which has already taken place. Verily, as the truth progresses and the word of Yahweh unrolls, Yahweh's servants in the end are to be aware of the day and the hour. For it says that is just what it does say, but what is the danger here? What caused the servant to begin to eat and drink with the drunkard? For they said that Yahshua delayed his coming. Well, I remember Willis Johnson prophesied in 2001 that 2002 was the antypical year of Yahshua's coming. So he's going to come to our threshold of the house right here in Kermit, because this is a direct antitype of what took place 2,000 years ago when he died on the cross. So we're 2,000 years right to the day. I said, we're in the antitype of that. He said, he will be here. And so, well, when it was all over, Brother John said, well, this wasn't the year after all. He said, it didn't happen. Okay. So it's fulfilled what I just read. There were only two occasions in all the church history that man complained that Yahshua delayed his coming. They were the first or the early Christian who had expected Yahshua to come immediately. That were your Millerites from 1833 to 1844, for they thought surely it would not be very long before the Yahshua would come in the like manner as he had gone up. But lo, almost 2,000 years have passed since the promise was given, and the Yahshua has not come yet. So there was a chance for the earlier Christian to complain that the Yahshua had delayed his coming. Now, Vigi Oliver is going to tell you also here that Yahshua, when he does come, he's going to come in the clouds of glory and every eye is going to see him. He's going to come in a real person at the end time. That's how wrong can you be? So we said that, but we are not dealing with this appointment at the commencement of the Christian church. Rather, we are speaking of the time when the Yeshua is really to come in the time of the end. See, the others believe that there's only 11 hours of the day, and he thought he was in the 11th hour, so he's teaching that he's the last prophet and that we're living in the end time. So Vitihalif is the one that's expecting Yahshua to appear in the clouds of glory, and he's trying to comfort the shepherd rod people with this up until the time he died in 1955. Okay, so it says, you know that there was a people on this end of the church's history who also expected Yahshua to come long before now. I suppose you would say they were the Millerites. But to this I cannot agree, because there was no delay for them, for they had set the date for the Yahshua's coming, and the outcome for them was not a delay, but a bitter disappointment. For the Seventh-day Adventists, though, since 1844, believed that in their lifetime, in their generation, Yahshua would come and take them to heaven. That have been Seventh-day Adventists for a long time, or even for a short time, know that it was their expectation. Instead, however, many of them are in their graves today. In the early days, our churches used to have a sign hanging in a side reading thus: "For the gospel preached to all the world in this generation." Those signs have long since been taken down. 100 years ago, everybody who knew Adventists knew what were our expectations, but it is not the case today. I can also recall that after I became a Seventh-day Adventist, I heard the brethren say that Yahshua will come almost momentarily. But the Yahshua has not come yet. They erroneously concluded that the Yahshua would come in a few years, but it was unto their detriment, for when the time passed, they became careless. We see then that, according to our early expectations as the Advent, the Yahshua apparently has delayed his coming. And inasmuch as no other people in all the Christian world ever expected Yahshua to come as the Adventists did, then this lesson is applicable only unto us. Moreover, when at first Yahweh's people expected Yahshua to come soon, they all seemed to conform to the diet regulations which were given to the church to keep them apart from the world. But when Yahweh's people thought that the Yahshua had delayed his coming, what did they do? The majority laid aside the Adventist habits of the eating and living. They seem not to have understood that their prescribed mode of the living, as the Yahweh had enjoined upon them, was not limited unto any certain time, but it was to be binding upon them until the Yahshua come. What will the Yahshua do about those who became careless because they thought the Yahshua delayed his coming? Let us read Matthew 24:48-51. But if that evil servant shall say in his heart, "My master delayeth his coming," and shall begin to smite his fellow servant, and to eat and drink with the drunken, that servant shall come in the day when he looketh not for him, and in an hour that he is not aware of, and shall cut him asunder, and appoint him his portion with the hypocrites. There shall be weeping and gnashing of teeth. The last words I heard from Brother Johnson when he was still able to stand in the pulpit, he was standing sideways in the pulpit. The pulpit faced the east and west, and he was standing sideways facing north. And he says, and all of a sudden his face turned black, and I thought, there's a black cloud that came over Brother Johnson. What is he doing? And he looked like a dark black cloud came over him. And he just all of a sudden started saying, "There shall be weeping and gnashing of teeth. There shall be weeping and gnashing of teeth." And he all of a sudden shook his head like he came out of a trance. And he looked around to see where he was at. He was standing in his pulpit, and he turned left, and he come around the pulpit, and he marched down to the front door. He was through with the sermon, and I shook his hand as I was going out the door. I said, "Huh, there's going to be weeping and gnashing of teeth." And Brother Johnson said to me, "There will be weeping and gnashing of teeth." He said to me and my wife, he said, you two are the only one that's getting it. You're the only one that's getting the message." He was talking about the rest of his church. It's going to wail and gnash their teeth. What a terrible disappointment it will be for the people that for a time waited for the Yeshua's coming, once lined up with his program, and then departed from it. To these the Yeshua comes when they are not expecting him. Matthew 25:1. "Then shall the kingdom of the heaven be likened unto 10 virgins which took their lamps and went forth for the meeting of the bridegroom." For this verse begins with the word "then," indicating that it takes place at the time that the Yeshua comes as spoken of in the preceding verse. In other words, at the time that the Yeshua comes, the kingdom shall be likened unto something. For the kingdom of the Yeshua as a crown kingdom does not exist today. Well, Bert Yadav is right, because that kingdom was set up in the 12th parabolic hour, and Bert Yadav is teaching that the 11th parabolic hour is the last hour, and he was teaching that that started in 1930 with his ministry of the Shepherd's Rod, and he was teaching here in the 1950s. He says, and that kingdom hasn't been crowned yet. Then what is meant here by the kingdom? For it is referring unto the people that are candidates for the citizenship in it, who are the subjects for the kingdom of the Yahweh. If they are not, see, the church. Let's do that again. For who are the subjects for the kingdom of the Yahweh? For they are the members of the Seventh-day Adventist Church exclusively. Then the people comprising the church of the Yeshua shall be likened unto 10 virgins. Matthew 25:35. And 5 of them were wise, and 5 were foolish. They that were foolish took their lamps and took no oil with them. But the wise took oil in their vessel with their lamps. While the bridegroom tarried, they all slumbered and slept. When this happened, the Seventh-day Adventist church is likened unto 10 virgins, and the ones that were foolish had their lamps all right. And Brother Johnson, he had that. He was in charge of that lamp. But they did not take with them more oil than what was in the lamps. Now I understand why Brother Johnson didn't spend his time teaching from the Shepherd's Rod books. He was teaching from his own inventions as he unfolded them on a daily basis as present truth, and that just wouldn't work. He wasn't getting that extra oil that was stored up in the Shepherd's Rod writing that we are getting today. For they, therefore, had no extra reserve of oil. What does oil stand for? When used in a lamp, it gives light, which illuminates your way, does it not? In the spiritual realm, it is the understanding of the prophecies of the Bible that alone taught you to know where you are going. Now, here it is right here. It's the understanding of the prophecies of the Bible. Now, if you don't have an inspired prophet giving you the understanding of unfolding prophecies of the Bible, then you're not getting this extra oil. That alone causes you to know where you are going. That alone. Only five other versions have the extra oil. They had availed themselves of the extra oil so that they could refill their lamps in the chase that the oil that was in them should be used before they reached their destination. For the light that came in 1844 for the lightning of the path forward was the truth of the judgment of the dead, which began then. Those that received this light call themselves Seventh-day Adventists from that time on. And Rollis Johnson was nothing but the angel of the candlestick, the last angel of the candlestick of the Seventh-day Adventist Church in 2002 when he came to his end. So who was Rollis Johnson? He was nothing but just a Seventh-day Adventist, is all he was. And the words used in this parable, for they filled their lamps with the oil which represented the judgment of the dead message, then came the tearing time. So what truth that Rollis Johnson had up to 2002 was only what was stored in those three angels' messages of the judgment of the dead. That's all he ever accepted all the time of his ministry. And so he didn't have no message for the judgment of the living, because he had turned it down. That was the extra oil. It is true that the Millerites, expecting the Yeshua to come unto the earth for the saints on a certain date in 1844, and he did not appear, he concluded, therefore, that they must have made a mistake, and they were no longer known by a name, for it was the Seventh-day Adventists that expected the Yeshua to come not on a certain day, but in a generation, in a certain period of the time. Since he did not come, however, they therefore concluded that Yeshua delayed his coming. Matthew 25:5-6. While the bridegroom tarried, they all slumbered and slept. And at midnight there was a cry made, "Behold, the bridegroom cometh, go ye out to meet him." The cry to meet the bridegroom comes after the time of the tearing. Well, that tearing time ended in 2002 at Kermit, Texas, of 158 years. Of Turing time from 1844 to 2002, 158 years. So Rollis Johnson, he brought the prophecy for the bringing to the end of the Turing time. Matthew 25:7-12. Then all those virgins arose, all 10 of them, and trimmed their lamps. And the foolish said unto the wise, "Give us of your oil, for all lamps are gone out." But the wise answered, saying, "How so? Lest there be not enough for us and you. But go ye rather unto them that sell, and buy for yourself And while they went to buy, the bridegroom came, and they that were ready went in with him unto the marriage, and the door was shut. Afterward came also the other virgin, saying, Master, Master, open up to us. Or, Yahshua, Yahshua, open up unto us. Verily he answered and said, Verily I say unto you, I know you not. For an announcement is made that the bridegroom cometh, and for all the virgins are awakened by it. If the announcement were to come from the general conference, you know that all the members would fill their vessels with oil, and all would have it. The facts are, though, that the cry does not come from there, because they're not designated leaders of the house of Israel. They are designated imposters and invaders from the Catholic Church, the enemy church. That's why the General Conference can't be there representing these 10 virgins. All trim their lamps, we are told. What is the implication in that? We may conclude that while the cry goes out, the people trim their lamps with the oil that is in them. In other words, they begin to apply their message for the change in their circumstances or events. But what happens? The lamps go out. That indicates that what we had expected to happen does not happen. Instead, something else takes place. Seventh-day Adventists are expecting the war of the Armageddon to take place next. When they see something different come instead, they will become confused. They will then realize that the oil in their lamps, the Judgment of the Dead message from 1844 to 2002, is not sufficient for guiding them through this situation. Then they were long, because the Judgment for the Dead was during the sixth seal, during that time from 1844 to 2002, but the Judgment for the Living is in the seventh seal. That started in 2002 at Connotation. It's not sufficient to guide them through this situation. Then they will long for the extra or additional light, that is the Judgment of the message of the Judgment for the Living, which had previously been available unto them, but they had failed to obtain it. See, Brother Johnson had this Judgment of the Living message he thought he was teaching in 1970, the 2002. The whole time he was closing out the Judgment of the Dead and didn't know it. Thus, feeling their urgent need of it, they will demand it from those who have it, but it will be too late. By the time they arrive at the bridegroom's chamber, they find that he has already entered and closed the door. They knock, they plead, thinking he will surely open the door and welcome them inside. But instead, what do they hear him say? Verily I say unto you, I know you not. And the door remains shut. Probation is closed for them. Let us now identify the different personalities brought in. Here is the bridegroom. But where is the bride? And who are the virgins? The cry was, Behold, the bridegroom cometh. This cry was not to the bride, but to the virgin. Now this is where Vichy Hollis gets all confused. And he's not given the true explanation of this, for the virgin can only represent the guest. Okay. Who is the bride? Let us turn to Revelation 21 for help in identifying who is the bride. Oh, this is bad, because the bride is your five wise virgins. And the five foolish virgins are vying for the position of being the bride. But when the test came for the true bride to come into the marriage supper, only the five wise ones were able to go into the marriage, because they said the bridegroom came. He came to get his bride. And who did he end up getting? The five wise ones. He got those to represent his bride. So I'm now going to go ahead and finish reading V.T. Hollis' variation of this, except to put the true application to it. So V.T. Hollis says now, explaining who this bride's wife, who this lamb's bride is, he says, Revelation 21, 9 and 10. And there came unto me one of the seven angels, which had the seven vials full of the seven last plagues, and talked with me, saying, Come hither, I will show thee the bride, the Lamb's wife. And he carried me away in the spirit to a great and high mountain, and showed me that great city, the holy Jerusalem, descending out of heaven from the Yahweh. For the Lamb's wife is the city. Now see, V.T. Hollis just off the cuff, he just says, now the Lamb's wife is the city. No, the Lamb's wife is in the purified city. And the city means another name for the Adventist church. It's called the city. So where is the Lamb's wife? The Lamb's wife is 144,000. That is in the Seventh-day Adventist church that appears with the Lamb on Mount Zion, Revelation 14:1, and the 12th parabolic hour that we're in now. Okay, so the Lamb's wife is in the purified city of the Seventh-day Adventist church, represented as the 144,000, as the five wise virgins of Matthew 25. For John saw the foundation and the walls and the buildings of the holy city. He did not see people. He called the city the Lamb's wife. Well, he didn't see the 144,000 that was in the Seventh-day Adventist church that had been purified by the Yahshua when he came to the Adventist church. John didn't see that. He didn't see the 144,000 inside of this holy city. For the city is the Lamb's wife. Okay, now let's do this again. For the 144,000, the purified section, first of the first fruits harvest of the Adventist church, represents the purified city, is the Lamb's wife. And if the virgins are the ones who are to meet the bridegroom. Let's do it again. With the 10 virgins, five wise and five foolish are the ones who are to meet the bridegroom, then who is the bride? Well, the question again is answered. It's the five wise virgins, not the five foolish. Because there's a difference made between the two. Just like in Matthew 24:45-47. There was a difference made in who is a faithful and wise servant, choosing one of two people. When Yahshua cometh to find so doing, rendering fruits in their season. Verily I'll make him ruler over all my good. Well, the five wise virgins become the Lamb's bride, and he makes the bride the ruler over all his goods. For the kingdom must be the five wise virgins, the people of the Yahshua's Seventh-day Adventist church are the guests. That's the laity. The members of this are the laity, and are represented by the virgins. No, the laity, the sitting out there in the impurities are not represented by the virgin, the purified virgin. They're represented as purified converts to the city. of many mixed people, races and people. For the same thing is true in this parable, as we find in the parable of the king going into for the examining of the guest for the marriage, one of whom with the one of whom he found without the wedding garment on. Those whom he examines are the guests, for the summarizing then of the people are the guests, as the kingdom is with the, as 144,000 represents the bride in the kingdom of the heaven that's set up in these vast days, Daniel 2, 4, 4, and 45. And Yeshua is the groom. Moreover, in the parable we are studying today, did the Yeshua come unto the earth where the 10 virgins were? Okay. Yes, he did. For he came where both the unworthy and the worthy virgins were. Well, where was that at? In the Seventh-day Adventist Church. And where was that at? Is at the headquarters of Gilead Center in Kermit, Texas, 2002, when he came to the earth and had a door of his own shut or to open. And Brother Johnson said that he's going to come to the threshold of the house, and Yahshua is going to knock at that door, and those that heard his voice would let him come in. Well, there wasn't but two of us, actually, at that time, down in Kermit, that heard his voice. That would indicate that he had a place of his own. Then he will come unto his kingdom, and unless the guests enter on time through the door, they will be disappointed when they knock, and the door will not be opened unto them. Since this coming of the bridegroom is obviously not the visible second coming of the Yeshua for the taking to heaven of his people who shall meet him in the air, we should be able for the finding in the Bible something more about it. Let us now turn to Matthew 25:31-32. When the Son of Man shall come in his glory, and all the holy angels with him, then shall he sit upon the throne of his glory. And that would be in the kingdom of David, Luke 1:32-33, and the prophecy of Isaiah 9:6-8. And behold, before him shall be gathered all nations, and he shall separate them one from another, as a shepherd divideth his sheep from his goats. That these verses say that the Son of Man is going to come down on a cloud unto where the just risen dead along with the living saints will meet him in the air, as in 1 Thessalonians 4:16-17. Is that what we just read? No, it says here that at this coming, he will gather all the nations before him, and then he will sit down on a throne and separate them. He will put the goats on the left and the sheep on the right. That would be the 144,000. Moreover, he will tell each of the two classes what they have or have not done, that cause them to be thus separated and judged. Do you, can't you see clearly why we need this extra oil of the message of the judgment for the living and the 12th parabolic hour? For the judgment of the dead is only in culminated in the 11th parabolic hour, 2002. As the Adventists, have been preaching the judgment for 100 years or more, and yet never even for a moment did we see that these parables were talking about the judgment for the living. If we never saw it before, we should now be able to see clearly that this judgment for the living includes the separation of the righteous and the wicked in the 12th and last parabolic hour that we've been in since 2002 at the opening of the seventh seal, Revelation chapter 8, verse 1. You cannot say that the judgment we are reading about in the Matthew 25 is the judgment which is to take place during the millennium, because these people are not then among the nation. There is positively no escaping the conclusion that it takes place in the time of the judgment for the living in the 12th and last probationary hour, when both the righteous and the wicked are commingled on the earth, since moreover this work of the separation goes on among the people, the messages, it is clear that it is not a work to be done in heaven, but it is a work to be done on the earth. Then shall two be in the field, the one shall be taken and the other left. For the two women shall be grinding at the mill, the one shall be taken and the other left. Matthew 24:40-41. Some call that the rapture, but it is quite different than what they think it is. Now we plainly see that the Yeshua in the Matthew 25 is talking about the judgment for the living. And in the connection with this subject, we find that the Malachi says that the very same thing, namely that after a messenger has prepared the way for the Yeshua coming suddenly unto his temple for the purifying of his temple, Malachi 3:1, when he comes, it is not for the judging of the dead in the heavenly sanctuary, for the judgment of the living, or only the judgment for the living in the earthly sanctuary. And if the Yeshua is going to sit on his throne on the earth and gather the nations before him and judge and separate the people, where specifically is Yeshua going to sit? In Daniel chapter 2, we find that the description and interpretation of the great image which the king of the Babylon saw in a dream, we as the Adventists, and for that matter, not only we Adventists, but other Bible students as well, recognize that this image represents the nations of the world from the Babylon's time down unto today. We also understand that the 12 kingdoms represents the nations in the existence today. Now let us read Daniel 2:44-45. And in the days of these kings, that is in the 10 toe kings, shall the Yahweh of the heavens set up a kingdom which shall never be destroyed, and the kingdom shall not be left unto other people, but it shall break in pieces and consume all these kingdoms in the 12th parabolic hour, last probationary time that we're in right now, and it shall stand forever. For as much as thou sawest that the stone was cut out of the mountain without the hands, and that it break in pieces the iron, the brass, the clay, the silver, and the gold, for the great Yahweh hath made known unto the king which shall come to pass hereafter, and the dream is certain and the interpretation thereof sure. This brings the end of our study. This hour, contact us at the 11th hour. Call us number 11. Click on our audio archive. We're going to close now with a song.